This is Kinch Rendell with Your Business Podcast, helping you find freedom through your own business and bringing you the latest and greatest. This is Chris Sampson. She has theveildiet.com, and she would like to make this month not the month of breast cancer awareness, but breast cancer prevention. Chris, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Kinch. Thanks for having me.
So, I got a free copy of your book. You also are giving away a free copy of your book.
I am.
Off of a, so we have a link in the show notes so people can go and get that. Let's just start with, why did you write a book called The Veil, or sorry, not The Veil Diet. What brought you to write this book? What with cancer? How is it so personal?
Well, there's a lot of background here. In 2007, I was diagnosed with a rare and aggressive form of breast cancer that's called triple negative. And people who haven't been in the breast cancer community might not recognize that term, but it means that it's estrogen, progesterone, and then this other thing called HER2-new negative. And it's pretty rare. It's about 15% of breast cancers, and it tends to strike younger women. I was 42 when I was diagnosed, and it is very aggressive, and doctors don't like it because they don't have all these other drugs to give you. Like with the other types of breast cancer, you can do chemo and radiation, and then afterward, for several years, you're doing these things like tamoxifen or aromatase inhibitors, and you know none of these work with triple negative, so that's why the doctors really don't like it. So I was diagnosed at that time. I'd always been pretty interested in health and wellness, especially in my adult life. My parents were into health and wellness, and I was kind of raised that way. But when I was diagnosed, that was when, you know, I didn't have like this big epiphany of like, oh, I have to start taking care of myself, because I really was. But my big epiphany was, wow, I really want to get this message out. I want to, you know, I mean, I did tweak my diet and I did a lot of new things, but I wanted to start to teach people how to prevent the disease.
And what gave you the confidence to even think that you could? Was it knowing that they didn't have drugs, so you better look at other options?
Yeah, I guess, you know, that was part of it, but also a lot of it goes back to the way I was raised. I mean, my family was not, like, one of my overriding memories of childhood was my mom arguing with all my doctors and dentists. Like, we had a regular, you know, we always had to change the doctors and dentists because back, you know, 40 years ago, she was arguing with them about, you know, mercury fillings and too many x-rays, and she wouldn't let, you know, she was always arguing with the dentists about getting, you know, all these dental x-rays that they're always trying to get you to do. And doctors they were just really into natural health. So that's kind of where I got that idea. Like, yeah, I can do this. Like when I was diagnosed, I did not think, oh, what are the doctors going to do for me? I mean, I immediately thought like, what can I do? What can I do? I want to do something.
What can you do for yourself, believing that your body can help itself at some level there?
Exactly. And to be clear, I did do the conventional treatments too. I did chemo and I did radiation. I had a lumpectomy, but I also did a lot of different alternative treatments, and I refused to do some of the things the doctors asked me to do. I just said, no, I'm not taking that drug. I'm not doing that.
So you did your research, it sounds like.
You looked
into what they talked about and said, let me look at the side effects, et cetera.
Yep, I did. And then it took me several years. That was 2007. And so over the next, you know, I went through treatment. I gave myself a year to recover, and then I started taking classes towards becoming a registered dietitian. So I took about 10 different science and nutrition classes to get into an RD program. And then it never really felt right to me. It never sat right to me. I don't want to be a registered dietitian. So I stopped. I just stopped, you know, a few years ago, and I decided to become a holistic health coach instead. So I went to the Institute for Integrative Nutrition and became a certified health coach. And then I, you know, around that same time, it was when I started the book too. And so it took me about 7 years between diagnosis and when I released the book, but that really is what kind of prompted me to write the book. And I started it in October of 2013 during Breast Cancer Awareness Month. And it was the month that I launched my website, theveildiet.com, and I posted a tip every single day for breast cancer prevention, and that's really what started the book. Because even, you know, 2 years ago, I was still like, I want to start changing the conversation this month from awareness to prevention.
That is so key. And let's just say again, or let me say the first time, your book is Leave Cancer in the Dust. They can get a free PDF download. They can also buy the paper book or the ebook on Amazon, once again, Leave Cancer in the Dust by Chris Sampson. I read the book, and anybody that's healthy, even a guy, let's say it's somewhat focused on women, but all the healthy things are healthy, and men get breast cancer as well. I mean, you just chop full of things from the Dirty Dozen, which fruits have the or vegetables have the most pesticides. You talk about organics. Hit some of the highlights on the food side, or what are some of the most important tips you would give people?
You know, one of my absolute favorite, I always think about this. I'm like, someday if there's, you know, if I go someplace where I can ask this question, I'm going to be like, what was it that stopped me from, you know, my cancer from coming back?
Yes.
Cruciferous vegetables is one of my favorite. I mean, cruciferous vegetables, you will find one that you like. There's so many of them, you know, arugula, bok choy, broccoli, Brussels sprouts, cabbage, cauliflower, horseradish, kale, mustard greens, radish, turnip, watercress. All of these are cruciferous vegetables, and they are loaded with these phytonutrients. One of them, there's something called sulforaphane, which is a compound that has been shown in several different tests to, you know, target and kill cancer cells and reduce, you know, women's risk of breast cancer. In fact, there was a study that showed that women who ate the most cruciferous vegetables had about a 35% lower chance of a breast cancer recurrence if they'd had it before, and a 62% lower risk of death from the disease. So that is absolutely one of my favorites. I can go on if you'd like to hear more.
I just want to make sure people have a clue. Your book has so many different things from your mind and body, from working out. Mm-hmm. I think it's Shake the Booty. Yep. One thing I can tell you, anybody that lives, so I'm in the Denver area, I've grown arugula in two different areas here, in Denver and then outside of it. That stuff grows like a weed.
Does it really?
The only arugula I've eaten this year, I shouldn't say the only, that I know of, I go and pick it about 20 feet outside my door, and I eat some leaves, and it's nice and spicy.
Yep.
And yet, then it produces seeds, they fall to the ground, and it will grow back next year. So that's something, me having a homestead, it's a no-brainer. And then reading your book, I actually starred watercress. You mentioned how healthy that was, and I'm like, they mentioned you can grow it indoors. So some of us, a fish aquarium you're not using, or go get a cheap fish aquarium. It sounds like you can grow so many things. And as a guy that started a permaculture farm and does homesteading, I would encourage a lot of us in the winter months to still try to grow some things.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure if you've tried that, but it's amazing.
I have not tried to grow watercress indoors, but I think I will try that.
When I researched after reading it in your book, I was like, oh, wow, they say you can just grow it in any water and keep it really wet. And some of these things are so easy. Some different of the lettuces. I don't have any of those little kits, but there's little kits you can buy that will grow lettuce indoors. So for a lot of us, maybe your kids, I would say, even if you have kids, they might like this, think it's fun.
Absolutely.
So there could be many, many ways to be healthy, which is a big reason why in putting here, I have a homestead for the kids as much as for me. So they can see this, they can eat the natural stuff. We're getting eggs from our chickens.
Yeah.
One thing I know you brought up that has, I used to live off of milk.
Mm-hmm.
And I finally get married, my wife gets pregnant. She can all of a sudden drink milk, and all of a sudden I can't. I then, about a year or two ago, I have a bad sinus infection. I go to the doctor. He wants to cut my nose off. Luckily, I found a book. This ties back into teeth as well and cancer and health. I luckily found a doctor that said milk is so bad for mucus things and to clean up your stress and your diet with the milk. So tell me about milk on the cancer side, or why did you talk about milk in the book?
Well, there is a lot of evidence that's sort of linking the consumption of dairy products to cancer. There's a book that was released right around the time I was diagnosed, right around 2007, which is called The China Study. Have you heard of that book, Kinch?
I have not yet.
Oh, okay. Well, it's written by a man named Dr. T. Colin Campbell, and I believe he is I think he works for, I can't remember. He's at one of the universities. Oh, darn. I can't remember which one it is. So this book, he back in the 70s or 80s, he went to the Philippines to investigate why children as young as four were getting liver cancer. And what they found was that these children were being exposed to this toxin that's found in moldy peanuts, and it's called aflatoxin, and it's one of, he calls it the most relevant, or no, that's, excuse me, I was going to say something else. This toxin is one of the strongest carcinogens ever discovered. And it was in peanut butter because the companies were using the good peanuts to sell, like, in the jars, and it was using the moldy peanuts to make peanut butter out of. And what they found was that it was like the rich kids who were getting the liver cancer, but the poor children weren't. And they found this link between casein, which is a protein in dairy, in liver cancer. And they were able in laboratory studies to literally turn these cancers on and off by either giving a casein or taking casein away. So there was a very strong, like, laboratory link. And then he was also participating in the China study, which is one of the largest epidemiological or population studies ever done. And it showed that, you know, it came to the conclusion that those who ate the most animal products were at higher risk for cancer than those who ate the least. So there is some pretty strong evidence. And there's a lot of people out there, just to be honest, who are saying that the China study has been debunked and that he didn't provide all of the evidence, and there, you know, some of the stuff that didn't fit his foregone conclusion was left out. I mean, there are a lot of people saying things like that. There's a young woman that I mentioned in the book. Her name is Denise Minger, and she's sort of a self-taught nutrition writer, and she analyzed the data, because he will provide his raw data to you if you ask him for it, at least that he would at the time. And she concluded that many of his findings were sort of misrepresented. But this isn't the only study that links dairy to cancer, especially hormone-driven cancers like breast, ovarian, and prostate, because conventional dairy, if it's not organic, has added growth hormones, and those can actually fuel the growth of cancer. But even organic dairy has natural hormones in it, which again can fuel the growth of hormone-driven cancers. So I don't tell people they can't have any. My whole the veal diet and everything I do is kind of about moderation. I don't really like the extremes. I'm not a big fan of vegan diets. I'm not a big fan of paleo diets. I think that people can have some safely, but this idea that we need 3 or 4 cups a day because the USDA tells us that's what we need, that's just ridiculous. That's based on politics. It's not based on health at all. It is based on lobbying efforts and hundreds of millions of dollars spent by the dairy industry to tell you that you need to drink 4 cups a day or 3.
Exactly, or cheese is a food group you need to have.
When
you bring up milk, one thing I heard also from a doctor, and I meant to send you this video. I will send it to you. This doctor was talking about how milk is milk, but when you add vitamin D to it, it just adds to the complexity and the things that are bad about it. When those two, I guess it was the calcium and vitamin D, in those quantities are mixed together, he said it was terrible. He was another guy that was saying stay away from milk. And in his talk about cancer, he covered everything from root canals having big issues and then also with what you mentioned. And he actually recommended a doctor in Colorado Springs, not too far from here. And he went from there to the different vitamins, and that's where I want to ask you. Most of my life, I've always taken vitamins, and you mentioned vitamin D3. I went and checked. That's what I'm taking.
Mm-hmm.
But also, the hour and a half long YouTube video is all about vitamin C, and how for some people, high dosages, like 100 grams a day, help them with cancer. So what do you say in vitamins in general? Obviously, eat as much of the vitamins as we can. Do you yourself take vitamins? Would you recommend that to people?
I do take vitamins. And I apologize for that beeping. My husband is calling me. I should have told him.
Oh, I didn't hear it.
Okay. Yes, I do take vitamins. I'm taking something right now that's kind of a multi. I can't remember. I don't have it in front of me. There's a whole bunch of stuff in it. The things that I think that everybody probably, you know, most people probably need to take are, like you said, vitamin D3. Because that's the vitamin that, you know, we would get from the sun during the summer months. But if you live anywhere north of the line that runs from Los Angeles to Atlanta, you're not getting any D3 from the sun or any vitamin D from the sun for, you know, a better part of the year. And vitamin D, they're just finding more and more, is just linked to vitamin D deficiency is linked to so many diseases, from cancer to heart disease to, you know, many, many others. So I do recommend that most people supplement with vitamin D3, and you want to do D3 because that's the kind that when the sun hits your skin, it converts it to D3. D2 is something I think that plants produce when the sun hits a plant.
Yeah.
So it's not it's not just as bioavailable to our bodies. So D3 is the one that you want to be taking, and, you know, studies I've heard Dr. Oz even say this, that like 80% of the people living in the Chicago area are vitamin D deficient. And even if you do live in the South or Los Angeles or whatever, there's a really good chance that you're putting on sunscreen all the time and you're blocking any D from being, you know, created by your body. And the other point I want to make about vitamin D is that, you know, you get it checked at the doctor, and I recommend everybody get their vitamin D level checked, because I meet a lot of breast cancer survivors, and a lot of them have told me, wow, I just, you know, my level was like 10, you know, when I got it checked. And The reference range is, you know, 30 to 70 or 80 or something like that. But the reference range, when you get it checked at a doctor, what I really try to help people understand is that is just an average of a whole bunch of unhealthy Americans. Like, it's a bell curve, and That's sort of the middle of the bell curve. It doesn't mean it's optimal. Like, most holistic, more doctors and functional medicine doctors, they're going to tell you want your level to be at least 50. And if you go to the doctor and it's 30 or 32, they're going to be like, you're fine, you're in the reference range. But again, you're being compared to a really unhealthy population.
Yeah, most of which eat more McDonald's than I do.
Yeah, exactly.
Probably a lot more.
Oh. Yeah, so D is definitely one. I also think that fish oil, you know, a good fish oil is something. I mean, it's great to get it from fish, also from wild salmon and things like that. But frankly, I don't want to eat salmon every single day. So I want to get the omega-3s from fish oil every day. So I do take a fish oil supplement.
That's where all this is covered in your book too. I mean, you not only know this, it's in your book. You cover wild salmon versus farm raised. You cover how to bake, or the, what is it, when you bake versus boil a sweet potato. It doubles. I mean, You have so much stuff in there. Literally, my wife is going to have a copy of your book that I'm buying, because it's good stuff. She loves to cook. She loves to know what's healthy. You cover so much of that. Something I wonder if you've looked at more of the hormone studies. Between cows and animals getting the growth hormone, and then they said also on these plants when they spray it on there, although once again, plants don't equate exactly, they said they have now found catfish with both female and male parts in them, and they figure it's because what we're spraying on the fields is washing through and getting into their water.
It's not just that. You know what's kind of fun? I mean, you probably heard this, but there was something very similar to that discovered in the Boulder River. I think it's called the Boulder River. It runs through Boulder. And it's because one of the theories, and I don't recall where I read this, but one of the theories is that you get a college town and lots of young women, like, are urinating out the leftovers from their birth control pills. And that's what will happen to the fish in the surrounding rivers. And that's one of the theories, is that it's because we're not just spraying the stuff, and we're not just in the animals, but we're on so many pharmaceuticals nowadays. And these things, You know, your body's excreting a lot of this stuff, and it ends up in our water supplies. And, you know, I mentioned that in the book too, how we have, you know, unless you have a reverse osmosis system, the water that you're drinking from your tap has pharmaceutical drugs in it.
And that's where you cover so many things. You just reminded me. Like, I have a Berkey water filtration system that
I
haven't
been
using.
How do you like it?
I loved it, although my wife didn't like the big stainless steel thing sitting in the kitchen, the container.
Okay.
I still have it. I will never get rid of it. And although we're on well water now, so we're 400, 500 feet down, so I'm thinking we're safer. Although we still drink mostly everything, but in the cities, it's amazing. Like you're saying, all these pills go in there. They say they clean the water up. And then they give it back to you with some chlorine in it. It's just, I would tell lots of people, like you said, reverse osmosis gets some kind of system to purify their water. Oh, and what you cover is even plastics and drink out of different things. Mm-hmm. Berkey, when I bought my Berkey, they even gave me a free travel little Berkey. It is plastic. Mm-hmm. I believe it's BPA free, but has a filter in it. I finally take that sometimes. I'm like, I should always have that with me. So I'm somewhere, I want to get a water fountain. I don't want to taste bad.
Yeah. Exactly. So I don't have a Berkey one, but I do have a different brand of a plastic. But again, it's BPA free, and it's also being filtered as you're drinking it. But I have a different brand that I travel with, and that way I can just fill up at the airport, you know, drinking fountain, and not worry about it being tap water. And again, I know when I'm getting a cup of tea out or a cup of coffee, it's probably made with unfiltered water. I don't want people to feel like, oh my God, I can't do anything because it's just too much, and it's just, why bother? Like, do what you can, do the best that you can. I don't, you know, I don't filter water and hand it to the people at Starbucks or whatever and say, like, here, could you use this water instead? But when I can, I make sure I'm drinking the best. And I'm more, there's, you know, for anybody who's listening who lives in Denver, you can get filtered water just outside of Rootdown and DIA. They have one of those, a big water filter thing that you can just fill up any old water bottle with. So I've seen those in San Francisco too. So there are airports now where you can get filtered water.
Oh, cool. So it's actually inside the airport. You can.
Yep. Terminal C, right next to Rootdown, which is just fantastic restaurant, best airport restaurant I think I've ever seen. I mean, just because healthy and farm to table, and it's just wonderful.
They also have a restaurant somewhere near Denver or Boulder, correct?
Yep. They have one in the Highlands.
Highlands. Yep. I've eaten there. I just couldn't remember. Yeah.
We just ate there a couple of weeks ago. I love that restaurant. It's an old converted gas station. It's got so much character, and it's just so cool. And it's just, the staff is really great. I just love it.
And that's where, for health, I would tell everybody, if possible, grow your own, or find local people that are growing, that have gardens, or that are farmers, and support them. And go and visit and see what they're doing. Even if not organic certified, ask them what they're doing. Some people aren't going to pay the money to be organic certified. I'm still debating that going long term.
Mm-hmm.
To have inspectors come, but all of us can go and find something fresh, support that, and hopefully get more of it. I mean, over the years, it seems like the grocery stores have more and more options. Oh,
yeah.
Talk about cleaning veggies and cleaning your vegetables, getting the Dirty Dozen, and what's on some of this food we're eating?
Well, there's lots of pesticides and lots of herbicides. One, you know, we talk a lot about GMOs, and we'll cover that, but regardless of whether the genetically modified plant itself is harmful to you, one of the biggest harms coming from GMOs is that because they've been genetically modified to withstand herbicides and pesticides without dying, they're sprayed liberally. So, for example, one of the herbicides that is used on some of these GMO crops is Roundup. I'm sure you've heard of Roundup. And it contains a chemical called glyphosate. And this glyphosate was just recently, about 4 or 5 months ago now, designated by the World Health Organization as a probable human carcinogen. And within a couple of months after that, several European countries banned it. And they keep dropping like flies. I mean, I keep hearing about more and more countries that are banning the use of this glyphosate. So if you're buying conventional produce, it has these herbicides and pesticides on it, and they'll try to tell you that they're not harmful because they're just trace amounts, and these things are designed to kill. Like, they're literally designed to kill. So it might take them longer to kill a human than it does an insect, but I firmly believe that they're still going to, they're still capable of killing a human. So what the Dirty Dozen is that you mentioned is, there's a fantastic organization called the Environmental Working Group. They have so many great resources, not just about food, but about cosmetics. And I refer to them throughout the book. They have so many great resources. But one of the things that kind of put them on the map was their Dirty Dozen and Clean 15. So the Dirty Dozen, which I think has like 14 vegetables and fruits on it now, it's the produce with the most pesticide and herbicide residue. So these are the ones that you really want to, go out of your way to buy organic if you can. And some examples, apples is usually number one on the list. I never, ever buy conventional apples, ever. If you do,
meaning those, you will, if you buy them, you buy organic.
Yeah, I'm always buying organic apples. Peaches, spinach, bell peppers, those are really, they're in the Dirty Dozen. Cucumbers, some of the things can be peeled. So if you just really can't afford, to buy organic, then maybe at the very least, wash them really, really well. You mentioned that. You sent me that link for that veggie wash. It looks amazing. I want to try that. I can't remember the name off the top of my head. But at least, or peel them if you can. And then they have the Clean 15, which are the ones that are, have a lot less pesticide residue. So you can save your money with the Clean 15 and buy them, conventional. And then just try to get the Dirty Dozen ones organic. And, I know it can be expensive. And one of the things that I always like to recommend to people is, when you go to the store, instead of going with like a list of, I want apples and strawberries and cucumbers, go to the store with a list of, I want three vegetables and one fruit. And then buy what's in season and buy what's on sale, because almost every time you go to the store, there's going to be something, even organic, that's going to be like a really great deal. And just buy that. And don't go with this, like, I have to have my apples, and you get there and the organic ones are $3.99 a pound.
Yeah. It's all about timing. That's where this house we bought last year, we had so many apples. I mean, couldn't even make applesauce and everything else. I think you even mentioned it's better to eat the skin. It's healthier. Mm-hmm. But then some years here, you don't have them. So that's where you also, I believe, mentioned you can buy some things at Costco that are organic frozen.
Yeah.
And buy them when they're cheap and keep them and use them. And there are, I mean, your book is chock full. I mean, just full of good ideas, healthy ideas. You go from what you can eat to also get us into, I believe I heard you say on another podcast that later you got around to maybe the mental side or the athletic side. Yeah. How does that tie in, stress and such?
Well, just because we're kind of jumping all over the place, I just wanted to let listeners know, when I sort of came up with the Vail diet, and I, you know, this is just what I call these things. A lot of people say things that are very similar, but there are really four things, in my opinion, that are key to good health. And it's not just the food that we eat. It is food, which I call nourish your body. It is physical activity and movement, which I call shake your booty. It is the environment that we live in, you know, the toxins that we're ingesting and putting on our bodies, which is I call heed your habitat. And then find your bliss, which is all the mental and emotional kind of thing. And so I was right on the food. You know, I was right on that. And I also made a very quick change to the heed your habitat, you know, part. I stopped using conventional cleaning products. I started cleaning. I clean most of our house is cleaned with vodka. I use straight vodka. I get the cheapest, most foul vodka I can find. You know, and I always feel the need to explain to the person I'm buying it from that I'm not going to drink it, but I'm actually going to clean my kitchen with it. And I put it in a spray bottle. Works great on granite countertops. It works great on stainless steel. It works great in the bathroom. And then I find that diluted white vinegar and water works really, really well on mirrors and glass. So that's what I use for mirrors and glass. And then we use like regular toilet bowl cleaner and stuff like that. But my husband cleans the toilet, so I don't have to be around it. So that was a really easy change for me to make. And then I've always been physically active, so that was a no-brainer too. But the part that I had the hardest time with was the find your bliss part, because I am a worrier, and I'm kind of I get stressed pretty easily. And I've actually found through some genetic testing, I don't remember the name of the test, but that my body does not deal with stress particularly well. I have this genetic thing that just makes it not handle stress. So that was hard for me, because I think that was as I mentioned when I was talking to Valerie in that other podcast, there's an old saying that you resist the strongest what you need the most. And I feel like that was kind of the case for me with the whole mental part of it and the emotional part of it. I just kind of resisted that one for many years, because, and I was like, I got this other stuff taken care of, and then I kind of just ignored that, because it's uncomfortable sometimes to deal with that.
Yeah, it's easier to do the easy things and harder to challenge yourself to find that part. That's where, getting back from this conference, they literally covered so many things in our life the last 50,000 years as humans. We pay attention to things that stress us because they might kill us, or we might die because of that. One of their big recommendations was remove as much of that from your environment, or what you're influenced by, or what you see every day. So just cut out. If it's the news that stresses you out, cut it out. Yeah. I heard you mention that you would drive by the cancer center, and this is when you hadn't had cancer the second time, and you're like, oh, yeah, the cancer center is right there in Edwards or what have you.
Mm-hmm.
And literally you caught yourself having that thought and said, whoa, I need to change that thought about I would maybe need to go there someday.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, I did that afterwards. I changed that thought afterwards. Yeah. I didn't change it before. I used to look at it and think like, oh, yeah, I'll be there someday. And then after I was diagnosed, and then when I started to learn all this stuff, I thought I need to – now when I pass a cancer center, I – say, wow, there's a cancer center. Well, they must have spent a lot of money on that. You know, I try very hard to not be like, oh, there's good to know that's there in case I need it someday. I don't think that way anymore.
Or something like, think, oh, they're going to help people that have cancer. I'm going to help people not have cancer.
Right.
But that's the other side of it.
You know what I always think? I think, God, I wish that was a wellness center. Like, I wish that, you know, 10% of that building was dedicated to the few people that actually ended up getting cancer, and then the other 90% was a wellness center that was dedicated to stop people from getting cancer. That's what I think when I see them now.
Yeah, because how many people, I think you touched on this too, the genetics, how many people think they're genetically destined versus, okay, if you're thinking that, I'm a big believer in you often get what you think about the most, or at least what you focus on the most. Whereas what I've, some of the research and studies I've seen, our DNA actually changes depending on our environment and our stress levels and what we're thinking about.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I think none of people know that, whereas you can touch on that and teach people in a wellness center and awareness. And
yes.
I mean,
one of the studies I quoted in the book was a 2008 study done at MD Anderson, which is one of the preeminent cancer hospitals in the world. And it showed that 5 to 10% of cancers are genetic in nature, and the other 90 to 95% are due to lifestyle and environment. You know, I don't, it's not about blame again. People, I start talking about that statistic, and it's, especially with breast cancer, there's this emotion around breast cancer that doesn't exist around, somebody has a heart attack or diabetes, everyone in their family's like, yeah, you got to stop eating so much butter, you know, or whatever, you know, I'm not slamming butter, but you got to, you know, they're always like, oh, you got to change your diet. But when it comes to cancer, there's this emotional aspect to it that people start to get very touchy, and they're like, oh, you're blaming me for my, and I'm not trying to blame anybody. I just, you know, this is about empowerment. I'm trying to empower people to take control of their own health and understand that there is something that they can do. So what the study showed, you know, was 90 to 95% are due to lifestyle and environment. And I understand that you can't control everything in your environment. We're exposed to things that we cannot control. But there are many, many things that you can control. And I've just recently, just a few weeks ago, I started in a master's degree program at the University of Western States. It's a degree in human nutrition and functional medicine. And we've already gotten into this, you know, this topic, and you absolutely can change the expression of genes with what you put in your body, the food you eat, with the toxins you're exposed to, the stuff you're putting on your body. This can absolutely change the expression of genes. So your genetic, they actually flat out in the textbook said, you know, it's, with cancer, genes play a very minor role.
Yeah, that's amazing. I think so. I bet most of the population has no clue what the latest science is. Oh, something you touched on, environment. I would just want to share that we redid a house in Denver actually twice, and there's something called new home syndrome, and I believe it's called VOCs. Volatile organic compounds?
Yep.
So we redid the wood floors and all new kitchen cabinets, and they have that fake wood, but you pay a lot of money for it. It's compressed board. We move back in. We have two little kids. Each day my wife comes home, after not being in the house for hours, she would throw up.
Oh, my God.
And I start thinking, I'm like, wow, we just moved back in. What is this doing to my kids if my wife is throwing up? And I was literally ready to move us out of the house, which, oh, my goodness, that would not have been fun. The wife's like, you got to be kidding. You're going to move us out. I spent several $1,000s on air purifiers trying to think that it can be healthy. So that's where – in our environment, you talk a lot also about sunscreens, and there's all this debate on which ones are good and bad, and there's a list of that. Is that the same website that has the Dirty Dozen?
It's the Environmental Working Group again, but this time just go to ewg.org/skindeep, and it's their cosmetics database, and it will show any product you want to look up. It will show you how it rates on a scale from 0 to 10. It's, you know, all beauty products and personal care products, sunscreen, lotions, makeup, all that kind of deodorant. And it will rate it, you know, 0 being the best and then 10 being the worst. And you'll be surprised, like some of the brands I kind of put themselves, I don't want to name them right now, but they'll put themselves on.
You can say
really
Neutrogena.
Yeah. I did hear that Johnson & Johnson, I read this like a year ago, that they were, over the next 2 or 3 years, they were going to start taking a lot of the chemicals out of Neutrogena. So I did mention them in the other podcast, I think, but afterwards I thought I should have clarified that, because I do think that Johnson & Johnson is trying to improve that one. But a lot of these other brands, they might seem like they're clean, and they'll rate like a 9 or a 10. I mean, I was using, before I was diagnosed, I realized I was using a lot of stuff. I used to use Lubriderm lotion all the time because it's not really scented or anything, and I thought it sounds pretty good. And I think it rates like an 8 or something like that. It's pretty high up there in the red zone. But I wanted to just address what you'd said about new home syndrome, because that's the big mystery in my life. That's the other question I'm going to ask if I can ever ask these questions, is my husband and I had moved into a brand new house in Edwards in October of 2006. We had new floors, we had new paint.
Oh, wow.
It was brand new. New furniture, new mattress, everything was brand new. December of 2006, 3 months later, I had a mammogram, which was clean. July of 2007, which was 6 months later, I had a 2-centimeter tumor. And, you know, so we moved in October and promptly closed all the windows and doors, basically, and stayed in that house with all of those chemicals pretty much being just locked in. I mean, we keep our windows open, even in the wintertime. I want my house, indoor air is some of the worst air that we're exposed to. So if you can, even in the wintertime, if you have a relatively mild day, try to open some windows and air your house out a little bit. And I am a firm believer in air cleaners. One of the naturopaths I worked with when I was going through treatment recommended at least have one in your bedroom, because your bedroom is one of the most toxic rooms in the house because of the mattress. So at least have an air cleaner in your bedroom. And if you need to buy a new mattress, there's this really great company now. It's called Tuft and Needle. And they make sort of a chemical-free version of a what's that spongy one? It's not Posturepedic, but that.
Oh, one of the foam beds.
Tempur-Pedic.
Okay, yep.
They make like a chemical-free version of that you can order right off of Amazon. It just comes in a box, and then when you unfold it, all the air gets into it, and it expands like exponentially. And it's literally like $300 or $400 for like the full size or queen size. I mean, the king is $750.
Say the name again.
Tuft and Needle. It's T-U-F-T.
Okay.
And Needle.
So good.
And I read about them, and you can get them on Amazon. And next time I need a mattress, I think I want to get one from that place, because it's just, I love when people do stuff like that. I want to support companies that do. I will never buy a conventional mattress ever again. I mean, the one we have now is probably outgassed 5 years ago, but it's like I'm done with conventional mattresses.
And that's for carpets and everything. And for us, they did our hardwood floors, and within 24 or 48 hours, we moved back in the house, and they didn't have the windows open. I mean, I started researching this, and I was just enraged that you could do that and that my family was sick.
Yeah.
And I was like, I can't have them here. That's for people. And I now know that I didn't know then. You don't have to have your floors putting those bad chemicals on there. You can use some oils that are much safer and stuff. So there's so many options for low VOC to no VOC paints. We paid the extra money for that stuff. But even the kitchen, the cabinets, which I think we paid 20 or 40 grand, some crazy amount thinking we're getting good cabinets. They probably off-gassed as much as anything else. And formaldehyde is one of the big things that off-gasses.
Yes, if it's in furniture.
There's
a company, and if you want to get, I'm trying to look it up right now. If you do want to get like sofas or whatever without that, they can be really expensive.
Well, yeah, exactly.
They can be like in the thousands.
Yeah, people that think about this or are concerned, there are options out there. And some people might not realize. I'd even say we're sometimes buying an older house is probably so much better.
Mm-hmm. At least you can fix things like one at a time. So you're not – I mean, when we moved into that other house, everything was new, including about half of the furniture in the house. So when we moved into the house we're now in Denver, we did paint it, but so we use very low VOC paint. I can't remember if it was zero VOC or very low. That's really common now. Almost, you know, it's so easy. You know, eight years ago, or 10 years ago when we built that other house, it would have been hard to find, and it would have been really, really expensive. Now it's really easy to find, and that the cost difference is minute. So definitely, you know, use low VOC paint. You can also get, we refinished a couple hardwood floors, and we used low VOC, I don't remember.
Like sealant or protectant.
And yeah, exactly. So you can do that. And then I was trying to look up if there's, I remember looking up because we're probably going to do sofa sometime in the next couple of years. And that's something that you spend a lot of time just kind of laying on and stuff. So I want it to be clean. And I started to look up sofas, and they're like $4,000 or $5,000 for a chemical-free sofa. But there is a website I want to recommend to people. It's www.greensofas.com. And they have... it says, as seen on HGTV, they have tons of different, you know, chemical-free sofas, and theirs range from like in the $1,000 to $1,500 range. So they're really inexpensive compared to the other ones I've seen.
And some people, maybe you pay the money, I don't know what it costs, to resurface one of your sofas, because that way it's off-gassed except for the outer fabric, maybe.
Yeah, yeah, and you could probably get, you know, some kind of organic fabric. That's a or chemical-free fabric. That's a really great idea. You know, why have it sit in a landfill if you can just reupholster it?
Yeah, it's reuse, reuse. So once again, your book, people can go and get a, they'll see the link in the show notes, Leave Cancer in the Dust. They can get a free PDF copy. They can also buy either the ebook or the actual paper book on Amazon.com.
Mm-hmm.
What else would you like to say about that? I'd like to hear about you transforming from being a CPA to what you're doing now.
Yeah, it's been a 7 or 8 year transformation that's still in process. I still do a little bit of finance and accounting work, but yeah, I spent several years kind of going down the RD path before I knew from the beginning it wasn't for me. I'm not, you know, I know there are some really fantastic registered dietitians out there, but I know also that their program is very much based on USDA recommendations and things like that. And it just wasn't for me. It just wasn't the path for me. I wanted to go more holistic. So that's when I did become a certified health coach. But I also knew I wanted to continue that education. And this other program that I met a few people over the years who had done it, and just one day a few months ago, it just hit me. It was time. I was ready to continue my education. I was considering a couple other schools. And then this one, I was just like, no, this is it. This is the one. You know, it was great because it has, like, all these prerequisites that are required. But I already took all of them when I was starting down the RD path. So
nice.
It gives me a chance to use all those prerequisites I took also. And it's just a really good fit. I'm really interested in functional medicine. And, you know, functional medicine is so different from conventional medicine because in conventional medicine, they look at a series of symptoms, and then they attach a label to it, which they call a quote-unquote disease, and then they assign a pharmaceutical drug to take care of it.
Or take care of the symptoms, maybe?
yeah, to manage the symptoms. And they don't care about what caused the disease. They give it zero thought. But functional medicine is the complete opposite. They want to, you know, they help the patient understand why they got sick in the first place and deal with the disease from, you know, its roots instead of just managing the symptoms with a bunch of harmful drugs. So it's a really great fit. I'm really excited about it.
And something you just talked about is what I've said on my podcast over and over. I started a side business when I still had income and let that grow and grow and grow. So you found a way to keep making some income with the knowledge base you had while pursuing a passion. Tell us, like, when you write a book, were you writing a book obviously to help people? What I hear about writing a book is you make money once you write 5 or 10 or 15 books because people like one, they buy your other ones. For you, is the book to get the message out? Does it help you business-wise? What would you tell people that want to write a book, or should they write a book?
I think writing a book is a great idea. It opens a lot of doors that wouldn't have been open to me otherwise. You know, I've gotten talks and speeches and stuff based on the fact that I had a book that I don't know that I would have gotten otherwise. I'm not saying you can't be a successful speaker without a book, but I believe that it makes the process a little bit easier. That said, you know, some people call a book a $10 business card, and I don't think of it that, and I never thought of my book that way. I mean, my book is not a business card. It is a way to get my message out. And yes, I want it to help people. I work with people as a coach one-on-one. I also have a group coaching program for women who have been through cancer treatment. It's called I Survived Cancer, Now What? Because there is a huge problem with women just like walking out that oncologist's door the last day and being like, okay, what the hell am I supposed to do now? Like, they didn't tell me anything. You know, they just shoved me out the door and said, have a nice life. And now I don't know what to do. And my body's not the same and I don't feel right. And so I do work with people. But not everyone can afford to work one-on-one with a health coach or even join a group program. And a $15 book is something that everybody can afford. And there's so much good information in that book, and it is not, like you said, it's just not just about cancer. I mean, everything I recommend in there can help you prevent heart disease and diabetes and other diseases and just live a really, really healthy lifestyle. So it's accessible to everybody, and especially now since I'm giving away the PDF for free, like, you know, it doesn't even cost you anything.
Yep. Oh, in addition, you also have, I want to call it a newsletter, you send out little things like, oh, pumpkin, is it good, is it bad, or recipes and such. So other people can connect with you, go to your website. sign up, I guess, with an email address, and they will get these. Tell us some of the things you've sent out recently, and what kind of feedback do you get from people?
First of all, I wanted to mention, if somebody does sign up for the book, they will automatically then be on that email list, so they don't have to go separately to my website.
Okay.
You can sign up for the email list on my website also, but like I said, if you want to get the free PDF download, you'll end up on the email list. Lately I've been on a pumpkin kick because it is pumpkin season. So a lot of the stuff I've sent out lately has been about pumpkin. Like in late September, I sent something out about, you know, pumpkin season, friend or foe, because pumpkin season, pumpkin's wonderful. It is so healthy. It's so great for you. But this time of year, food companies will just try to pass off any old piece of junk to you, and they'll throw the word pumpkin on it, and it's just a sugar bomb. You know, the pumpkin lattes that you see everywhere, they're just awful. There's a certain juice chain that has a special pumpkin smoothie, and it has, let me see, I want to make sure I get this the right amount.
It's going to be like a Dairy Queen Blizzard.
Oh, it's
200 calories. And
there's a small, it's a 16-ounce, it's a small, it's a pumpkin smoothie from one of the bigger chains. It has 69 grams of sugar. So in case your listeners don't realize it, 4 grams equals 1 teaspoon. So that is 17 teaspoons of sugar in one small drink. So I sent out some information about, you know, just be careful during pumpkin season. And then I had a couple others about, you know, the benefits of pumpkin and the seeds. And so, you know, I try to send them useful information and just tips and, you know, occasionally an offer for something or something about the book or whatever. You know, I try to mix it up a lot, but most of what I send out is useful information, and it's not just, you know, one sales email after another. It's, the most of them are just tips and things like that, and with the occasional offer thrown in there.
Oh, do you want to,
like, 80%?
Yeah, when you do coaching, do you want to tell us, like, what that involves? I know you want to do at least, like, a 5-pack of meetings.
Yep.
What do you really tell people from the side that I want to coach with you to, what do you want to tell the people coaching-wise? What could you recommend them tip-wise?
Well, when I work with people, I typically like to work with them on a 6-month program. And what that entails is two phone calls or Skype calls, or if they're local, we can meet in person, meetings a month that last approximately an hour, and it goes over the period of 6 months. And we do 6 months because it really, I want people to make lasting and sustainable changes. This is not about just doing a detox. I mean, I've talked to people who are like, nah, I don't need you to do it. I'm just starting this detox, you know, and that's going to solve all my problems in 21 days. And then you talk to them, of, you know, several months later, and it's like nothing has changed because they did their detox and they immediately went back to their old habits. So we do a 6-month program so people can make lasting and sustainable changes with the support of somebody who's going to guide them and just support them and hold them accountable. That's one of the biggest, you know, benefits of coaching, is just being held accountable. But I also, you know, some people just don't want to commit to 6 months. They want to maybe try it out. So I do offer a 5-pack if somebody wants to, you know, just do a shorter, you know, not commit to a full 6 months, and we can space those out over about 8 weeks or so. And then if, you know, I did start offering recently, I don't know if I'm going to keep this name, or I call it the fire hose right now, because it's like a fire hose of information. If somebody really just wants to sit down with a list of questions and grill me for 90 minutes, you know, I can offer that too. I don't think that's the best way to do it, because I think when people get too much information at once, the likelihood that they're going to implement any of it is pretty low. But some people just want to do that. So, I'm also going to start, if somebody wants to contact me, they can just email me at Chris with a K, K-R-I-S, at theveildiet.com. But I'm going to start offering grocery store tours now too. So I could take you to Whole Foods or natural grocers and teach you how to shop in a health food store, because it can be very different. Or if you want to go to King Supers or Safeway, I can teach you how to shop healthy in a conventional grocery store.
If you're allowed, I could see that being periscoped or just recorded, or even just slide pictures. And you can take pictures of this product, the ingredients, and show it, whether it's a freebie or something else, an add-on to something. Mm-hmm. I could see that being, on the business side, a way to go, this is a virtual tour with me. Or this is what I go and buy. I mean, I can tell.
I would love if I could find somebody who's, you know, can program to build me sort of an app, but that's you look at a computer screen that literally has like the, like a bird's eye view of the inside of a grocery store. So, you know, I could sit there with somebody on a computer, we could both log in, and we would like wander around the store, and we'd be in the produce section, and then I could talk about different things in the produce, and then we could wander, you know, around the store. And like,
well,
I just have this,
if you're not familiar with Periscope, you can walk around filming yourself and people can comment to you. There's several platforms now that will let you interact with people, but you're basically live broadcasting and they can say,
okay,
oh, I like this. Or so it's something I've done a few times on the farm, just playing around like, hey, look, I'm moving the chickens or what have
yeah.
you.
That's a good idea. I've heard of Periscope. I wasn't super familiar with it yet. I guess you'd probably have to get somebody to film you, and you'd probably have to get the store's permission to do that too. But
yeah, exactly, in the stores. But that's, and I'll tell everybody out there, having an accountability partner, I've heard this for years, and finally, I got back from this conference, I'm all pumped up, I call a good friend, I said, hey, check out Accountability Partnership, he Googles it, I'm like, let's do this, let's check in every day. Basically, paying someone like Chris to be a coach just helps you step forward so much faster, avoid the pitfalls, she's been through it, she knows it, it's invaluable. At this conference, the guy that put it together, and all the money went to a charity for kids, actually.
Oh, nice.
He literally said, I've spent over $100,000 on coaching for myself being coached, to have the
mm-hmm.
relationships, the networking. So I'm realizing more and more, for me, I feel like most guys, we want to do it all ourselves.
Yep.
The people that get ahead, the people that want to be healthier, they have coaches. Michael Jordan, I heard at the conference, had 12 coaches.
Yeah.
Between eating and working out and stretching and
mm-hmm.
the same thing. And that's for a book also. So somebody might not think they can afford or don't want to. Start with her book, Chris's book. She has so much stuff. We've touched on only some of it
mm-hmm.
to get ideas. It's like she is your coach with the book, and then you can follow up with her, enter the program. Especially, I love the fact that you realized the group of women, they get out, and now what? They're probably scared. They might get cancer again, and
right.
you can help. You've been through it.
Right, exactly. And, you know, the book, one thing I want to point out about the book is I don't want to overwhelm people. You know, it's 50 tips, and then I have 5 bonus tips. So there's 55 different tips in there. What I tell the readers at the beginning of the book is don't try to do everything at once, because you're going to make yourself crazy, and it's really expensive. Just concentrate on one a week. So if the tip that week is cruciferous vegetables, go out and buy yourself, you know, some broccoli and some arugula. And make sure that you have a cruciferous vegetable every single day. And then the next week when it's turmeric, go buy yourself some turmeric and use it as liberally as much as you can that week. And just really try to concentrate at one at a time. And it literally is like just having your own little coach, you know, in a book that will tell you, this week let's do this, this week let's do that, and here's how to do it, and here's the pitfalls, and here's, you know, just, I think that's a great way to kind of use the book instead of being like, oh my God, I have to do all this at once. I'm going to go to the store and spend like $500.
Yeah, me and my hobby, I can tell you, of racing cars and parking lots, I go to a coaching session, I get all these ideas I try to implement, and I regressed. And that's why I could imagine somebody, I got to do 55 things, you regress
mm-hmm.
and you got give up. Whereas for paleo, the paleo diet lifestyle, I say I am paleo influenced. As in
mm-hmm.
most of the times now, if I get a burger, I take top or bottom bun and I throw it out. I just
mm-hmm.
let the stuff influence me. So just reading over your book,
right.
these things will influence me, and they'll remind me of other things. Like literally you mentioned in there apple cider.
Yep.
And my nose was all messed up. I wasn't feeling too good yesterday. And I'm like, I have that. I know it's good fermented things you mentioned in there. So I go downstairs
mm-hmm.
and I poured some along with all my vitamin C. It's just for me and for I think a lot of us, it's just the knowledge, oh, yes, I should have a kale again today, or I should have
mm-hmm.
add something. Improve, as James Altucher would say, 1% a day. Can
right.
you improve your diet a little bit and just be aware?
Right, right, exactly. And then, you know, once you do this for a year, if you really did take this and do one tip a week at the end of the year, you would be so much healthier. You would have developed some new habits that would have stuck with you throughout the entire year. Some you would have, you know, some of the stuff you might have tried and not like, and it's not going to resonate with you, and that's absolutely fine. I mean, you can't do everything every day, and I think that even drives me crazy. And I know to watch out for this, but like if you want to do everything every day, it's like I could wake up in the morning. I was just coaching somebody last night, had a coaching session, and you know, we talk about all these different things that she can do, and I just said just make a list of like 5 or 7 of them or whatever. And then wake up in the morning, keep that list where you can see it, and pick one. And just do one that day. Because if you try to do all 5 or 7 or 10, you're going to go crazy. You're not going to do it. You're going to do it once. It's going to take up half your day, and then you're never going to do it again. Just pick one.
Yeah, I can relate that to my to-do list. When I make a list in the morning of five things I want to get done, most of them get done right away. It's the focus, like you're saying. Especially if you start with one, you can check it off pretty quickly and be excited. Oh, I got a random one you made me think of reading your book. I believe Shailene Johnson, very popular, had a workout book.
Yes, I know
now
her.
Now she's all into helping people find their passions and work toward them. Mm-hmm. She mentioned lemon water with ginger, I want to say. Leave it in the fridge overnight. Maybe it ferments a little bit. So something else, just knowing of all these things, it's things you can try and find out what you like, what works for you.
Absolutely. I do mention lemon water in the book, too. That's a great way to try to kind of flush out your liver in the morning. So you have it like a big 16 or 20-ounce glass of water with the juice of maybe half of a lemon. Throwing some ginger in there and letting it sit the night before, that sounds amazing. And because ginger is mentioned in my book, too, and that's anti-cancer and good for digestion and good for nausea. Yep. And so that actually sounds like a really – I've never – thought about the ginger. I never thought about putting the ginger in the lemon water. Sometimes I'll put apple cider vinegar in my lemon water, and just to warn people, it is an acquired taste. I mean, we're talking vinegar, so you're not going to love the taste of that. But ginger and lemon in water sounds really delicious.
And you made me realize nausea, which I should know, but had I had it yesterday before I got on the airplane, I was like, oh, even the cab ride to the airport, I was like, I do not feel good. I should have clued in. I should take some of the stuff with me. You can take it and add it to your water later. Oh, they said it's also very good for digestion. It's basically creating the hydrochloric acid or something by leaving it for one day, it will really help with digestion.
Ginger or apple cider vinegar?
The ginger and lemon water mixed together for one day.
Yep. That's a great thing to do right before, maybe 15 minutes before a meal. It will stimulate your stomach acid, which is the hydrochloric acid you just mentioned. You could do ginger, lemon water, or ginger and lemon water, you can diluted apple cider vinegar. All three of those will, if you drink a small glass of that with, you know, diluted with the lemon or, you know, whatever, about 15, 20 minutes before you eat, it will stimulate your stomach acid. Because we're doing the opposite of what we need to do right now. We have all these people with digestion issues and acid reflux, and we're giving them drugs to turn off the production of the stomach acid. And most of these people, their problem is not that they have too much stomach acid, it's that they don't have enough. And we're taking these drugs and we're giving it to them to turn off the production of stomach acid when they don't have enough in the first place.
And that's where I believe all of these, on the blog is where you have all these different articles people can read and catch up on. It's theveildiet.com.
Mm-hmm.
You even have recipes. You talk about health and goods and press. And once again, you have your coaching speaking. I can't impress upon people enough. If you're scared, if you don't know what to do, get the book. Give Chris a call. Send her an email. Give us a quote to live by. I know you mentioned. Is there a quote?
Yes, I have one in my book, actually. And it was the quote I started living by after I was diagnosed, and that is, never, ever pass up broccoli. And
okay,
what that
you
means is because when you see broccoli, eat it. Like, you don't have to eat a ton of it. Just whenever you see it, even if it's a salad, but I don't like raw broccoli. I hate it, in fact. But when I'll just pick one piece off of a salad bar and eat it. I mean, I never broccoli and just be like, nah, I'm not going to have any. I just eat it whenever I see it.
And once again, on the farming side, most people in this country can grow broccoli through the winter. In Denver, of course, Denver being a city, it's a little hotter. I planted some of that stuff, and it was against a brick wall, and it just kept living. That and cabbage. It literally, you can grow it. If not, maybe you have a little greenhouse, a cold frame. You can grow that. That's one thing I plan to do with one of the greenhouses. I'm putting one together that's concrete. So a major one, I'm building another small one. Some of these things in a lot of the country will grow in the wintertime. They're a cool season. In Texas, this is when you grow your carrots and your broccoli and your cabbage. It's this time. It finally cooled off enough. How do you clean that?
I would love it if you would come over next spring and help us with our – we have a little patio, and we're going to make some changes to it. It's got some planters in it right now, but they're taking up all the space. But we're going to leave one planter in, and we want to put just buckets and maybe a trellis or whatever, but we'd love to have you come over and, like, help us plant a little – vegetable garden. We tried to plant arugula this year, and it just got shredded by those hailstorms that we had. Arugula.
And that's where I was surprised arugula actually grew in the shady area when I lived in Denver. It wasn't exposed to full sun, and it came back the next year. I was like, wow, reseeded. Oh, how do you clean broccoli? Is it one of the dirty dozen?
No, it's actually one of the clean 15.
Oh.
Some of those more bitter vegetables, they're actually, it's kind of funny because, you know, humans often don't like them, and neither do pests. The pests tend to like sweeter things. So broccoli, because of its, you know, just kind of bitter, it doesn't need a lot of pesticides, so it doesn't have a lot of pesticide residue.
Good, because cleaning that, it's in our fridge right now. I saw it this morning, like, how would I clean all those little pieces? I have no clue.
I always just cut the florets or whatever they're called off first and then rinse, you know, put it in a colander and then just rinse it out really well. But, yeah, it's no biggie. And you can also eat the stems. That's, you know, people tend to throw the stems away. I juice the stems often, but even if you want to just eat them or shave, you know, you can shave them into a salad. All you have to do is, you know, clean it really well and then peel. To use a carrot peeler, potato peel or whatever, and then peel the outside of the stem off, because that's a little bit tough, but the inside isn't. So once you've peeled off the outside, then you can kind of just continue to peel and peel like strips of it into your salad and just eat that. Or juices.
Yeah, you made me think of in your book, celery. I can't stand celery, but you hype it so much. I think you mentioned maybe you can juice it or blend it up.
Yeah.
Maybe, just maybe I'll have the wife throw little pieces in. I'm just like, oh, that's a weed.
Oh,
I know it's a weed.
Like celery.
Oh, it's terrible. Side note here once again, because I am all over the place. I have what they call is a geographical tongue, where certain things like cilantro, you got to be kidding me. I think you mentioned, not mint, but cilantro or something. Oh, it's torture. I would not eat a lot of things like that.
I used to hate cilantro, but I've discovered over time that you can develop a taste for anything. In fact, I used to hate most foods. Even when I was kind of in my 20s and trying to eat healthy, it was, you know, it was the 90s and late 80s, so it was, you know, people were making a lot of mistakes. But it wasn't really until I was 30 when I expanded my palate, because I moved to New York City from Minnesota when I was 30, and I was just like, I'm not getting away with this. Like, I couldn't be like, I don't like that. I don't like this. I don't eat fish. And I was traveling all over the world, and I actually worked for the pharmaceutical industry, believe it or not. And I worked in internal audit, so I was traveling all over the place. And I needed to have a more sophisticated palate than I did. And I started eating things that I hated before, like mushrooms and just, you know, dark leafy greens and all the stuff that I used to not like that much. And I'm firmly convinced you can develop a taste for it. I used to hate cilantro, and I just started adding a little bit at a time. And then I just really got used to it. The only thing, there's a couple things I have no desire to even develop a taste for. That is lima beans and green beans. There's something about in those yellow wax beans. I hate all those three of those things, and I will never develop.
See, I'll eat green beans. I can eat green beans. I planted 50 pounds of garlic, so I have a lot more now. Mm-hmm. I now, because I grew it, I just start eating it. I will cut it up, put it in whatever I'm eating, because know it's good. Oh, and your book is chock full of all kinds of tips from, my wife didn't know this when I told it to her. For onions and garlic, you say cut it up and let it sit for at least 10 minutes before you cook it, so that I don't remember the rest. I know you're supposed
to. There's a compound, the really beneficial compound in onions and garlic, and they are really good for you. I mean, the studies show that they reduce your risk of breast cancer by something like, I want to make sure I get this right. There was a study that showed a 50 to 80% reduction of all major cancers in people who ate onions and garlic. So,
wow.
There's this compound in it called allicin that will not form in heat. It's relatively heat resistant once it's formed, but it will not form in heat. So if you cut your onions and garlic and you immediately throw them into heat, this beneficial compound is never going to form. But if it just forms in the air once you chop them. So whenever I make anything, the first thing I do is chop my onions and garlic before I get any of the other ingredients together. And then while I'm getting the other ingredients together, the onion and garlic are just sitting there forming this compound. And then once it's formed, it's relatively heat resistant. You don't want to fry the stuff or whatever, you know, bake it at super high heat or cook it at super high heat. But once it's this allicin's formed, then you can cook your onions and garlic, and a lot of it will be maintained. But it won't form if you just throw it right into the heat.
Yeah, that's where I love going through the book. I was like, literally, it's something you got to read over and over for me to go, okay, what exactly, for me to explain it anywhere close to what you do, but just to now know, like, oh, yeah, I eat that, but I should cut it up first before I throw it in the pan if I'm going to cook it with butter or simmer it and such.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so I got to tell everybody, the book is Leave Cancer in the Dust. You can get a free copy. You can click the link down below, put in your email address, and back comes the PDF. You can also buy it on Amazon. You can get it today on your ebook from, is it the Kindle app? Yeah, with Amazon, it's got to be the Kindle app, which people, a lot of people don't realize, you can have an Android phone, you can have a laptop, and you can install a Kindle app and get all the Kindle books without actually owning a Kindle.
Yep.
They said it, amazing many people don't even realize that that's available. It's just instantaneous. I love it. You can highlight things and go on and on. Any other thoughts? I mean, this has been great. Your book is great. You're doing good stuff. You're getting your message out there and helping people.
Thank you. I can't think of any final thought. I just want to say thank you for having me. It's been really fun. I could go on. I mean, you and I, we've chatted a little bit at Toastmasters, and we could go on for like 6 hours talking about this stuff. So it's been really fun, and I'd love to come back sometime.
We probably shouldn't, but sometime we could talk about GMO stuff. I could start doing a podcast for the farm side.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I would love to get in a conversation about that.
Yeah. We will chat sometime. I know you're headed to a trip. Have a great trip. This is Chris Sampson. Her website is theveildiet.com. Once again, you can get her this. She wants this to be Prevention Month for breast cancer instead of just awareness. You can get a free book with the 55 tips by going to the link down below. Once again, Leave Cancer in the Dust, and the website is theveildiet.com. Chris, it was a lot of fun. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye. Bye.